بست الجبال بسا فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم أزواجا ثلاثة فأصحاب الميمنة ما أصحاب الميمنة وأصحاب المشأمة ما أصحاب المشأمة والسابقون السابقون أولئك المقربون في جنات النعيم ثلة من الأولين وقليل من الآخرين على سرر موضونة متكئين عليها متقابلين يطوف عليهم ولدان مخلدون بأكواب وأباريق وكأس من معين لا يصدعون عنها ولا ينزفون وفاكهة مما يتخيرون ولحم طير مما يشتهون وحور عين كأمثال اللؤلؤ المكنون جزاء بما كانوا يعملون لا يسمعون فيها لغوا ولا تأثيما إلا قيلا سلاما سلاما وأصحاب اليمين ما أصحاب اليمين في سدر مخضود وطلح منضود وظل ممدود وماء مسكوب وفاكهة كثيرة لا مقطوعة ولا ممنوعة وفرش مرفوعة إنا أنشأناهن إنشاء فجعلناهن أبكارا عربا أترابا لأصحاب اليمين ثلة من الأولين وثلة من الآخرين وأصحاب الشمال ما أصحاب الشمال في سموم وحميم وظل من يحموم لا بارد ولا كريم إنهم كانوا قبل ذلك مترفين وكانوا يصرون على الحنث العظيم وكانوا يقولون أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئنا لمبعوثون أوآباؤنا الأولون قل إن الأولين والآخرين لمجموعون إلى ميقات يوم معلوم ثم إنكم أيها الضالون المكذبون لآكلون من شجر من زقوم فمالئون منها البطون فشاربون عليه من الحميم فشاربون شرب الهيم هذا نزلهم يوم
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining us for another night of our Muharram program. Inshallah, to start off our program, I would like to welcome our dear brother, Muhammad Abbas, for some recitation from the Holy Quran. Please help me welcome him with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
صلوات على محمد وآل محمد. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والسماء ذات واليوم الموعود وشاهد ومشهود قتل أصحاب الأخدود قتل أصحاب الأخدود النار ذات الوقود إذ هم عليها قود وهم على ما يفعلون بالمؤمنين شهود وما نقموا منهم إلا أن يؤمنوا بالله العزيز الحميد الذي له ملك السماوات والأرض والله على كل شيء شهيد إن الذين فتنوا المؤمنين والمؤمنات ثم لم يتوبوا فلهم عذاب جهنم فلهم عذاب جهنم جهنم ولهم عذاب الحريق. إن الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات لهم جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار ذلك فوز الكبير. إن بطش ربك لشديد إنه هو يبدئ ويعيد وهو الغفور الودود ذو العرش المجيد فعال لما يريد. هل أتاك حديث الجنود فرعون وثمود بل الذين كفروا في تكذيب والله من ورائهم محيط بل هو قرآن مجيد في لوح محفوظ. صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
Send brother, please give another loud salawat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. I would like to welcome you once again to tonight's program. Inshallah, the nightly programs will continue nightly. Doors open at 6:45, and we plan to start at 7:10 sharp, inshallah. Just a reminder, inshallah, if we could all follow the masking and facial covering that's required. Another announcement is, inshallah, this Sunday, August 15th at 9:30 a.m., there will be a procession held by the Ashura Project. More details will follow soon, inshallah. Lastly, for nursing mothers, there is a room directly in the back, and the bathrooms are in the cafeteria directly under the stairs, inshallah. We ask you to continue using the parking lot and in front of the building and on the side of the building for parking, inshallah. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Labbaika ya Hussein, a phrase that we always shout and scream, but what does it mean? Labbaika ya Hussein means not to be shy by your faith and not to pick and choose when it comes to your Islamic duties. Labbaika ya Hussein means to give charity, help the poor and the orphans. Labbaika ya Hussein means if you are the only one left speaking the truth and standing for the oppressed, then you are standing tall and resilient. Labbaika ya Hussein means wherever on earth there is oppression taking place, like in Kashmir, Palestine, Yemen, Iraq, or in your local community, you stand up and you speak for the oppressed against the oppressors. So this year, like every year, let us renew our allegiance and let's say together, Labbaika ya Hussein! Labbaika ya Hussein! Labbaika ya Hussein! Labbaika ya Hussein! And now it is my great honor to welcome our dear scholar, Sheikh Salim. Please help me welcome him with three loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من يومنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين.
Respected brothers, sisters, mourners, lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, may Allah reward you for your participation in this gathering. Truly, we are blessed and honored to be invited to such a gathering and to receive the blessing of being amongst such a gathering. In the Quran, the dua says, Rabbi awzi'ani an ashkura ni'mataka lati an'amta alayya wa ala waliday wa an a'mala salihan tarda. O my Lord, inspire me, allow me to be thankful for the blessings that you've given me and my parents. And allow me to act upon them in a way that you are pleased with me. So we hope that inshallah these blessings can be appreciated, recognized, and acted upon. Like yesterday evening, I'd like to begin this speech with going to a story of one of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, taking a lesson from that story and then inshallah applying it to our discussion about leading a lifestyle of the Ahlul Bayt, leading a lifestyle of Imam Hussein, leading a Husseini lifestyle. The story I'm about to tell is about a companion who is probably lesser known, oftentimes he's not talked about, but just like with all the other companions, he has a story and he is among the shuhada, and there's something that we can take from his story. His name is Yazid ibn Ziyad, not Yazid the Khalifa, la'anatullahi alayh, but somebody else whose name happened to be the same as the name of the Khalifa. His name was Yazid ibn Ziyad, and not Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad either. The names sometimes are the same, but the people are different, and doesn't mean that they are related with each other. Now, he was an archer, and he was very skilled at archery, He was part of the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. He was with the Kufan army. He had been dispatched from Kufa to actually go and intercept Imam Hussein alayhi salam, not allow him to go to Kufa. And eventually, you know, he goes along with the army to Karbala. Just like everyone else, he is listening to the khutbas of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He's hearing his words. He's being affected by them. He is an observant person, so he sees the difference. On one hand, you have Umar ibn Sa'd, and he sees his leadership style. He sees what kind of values he holds as important when he's a leader, and he compares them to the leadership style of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And then you know how on the day of Ashura, Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi, he gave a speech to his own army before he went over to the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. They say, at least in some reports, that that speech was very effective. And one of the people who was affected by it was none other than one of the chief archers of Umar ibn Sa'd's army. This man named by the name of Yazid ibn Ziyad. And so he's going through this type of transformational process, not unlike Hur. And he decides that truth is with the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He makes the journey over to the other side, to Imam Hussein, and he joins him and his army. And on the day of Ashura, this man is somebody who really contributes with everything that he has. They say that first he went into the battle and he fought until the enemy came and they cut off the legs of his horse, so he didn't have any way of moving forward on his horse anymore. So what he did then is that he came back to the army of Imam Hussein, he goes down to his knees, and he takes out his bow, and he begins to fire the arrows, and he was counting, he fired 50 arrows, only 5 of them missed the target. 45 hit their targets. And all the while, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was praying for him. Allahumma saddid ramyahu. وَجْعَلْ ثَوَابَهُ الْجَنَّةِ O Allah, make his archery like firm and make him hit his target and make his reward be paradise. Now, when he then runs out of his arrows, then he stands with his sword and he is now going to the final battle. The Maqatil, the books of history which record what happened on the day of Ashura, they quote the poetry that he said. So one of the lines he says is this. He says, Ya Rabbi, inni lil Husayni nasirun. O my Lord, I am for Hussein a helper. Wa libni sa'adin tarikun wa hajir. And I am for Ibn Sa'ad. I have left him aside and I have gone away from him. I'm cut off from him. Now, in the story of this man named Yazid, again, not that Yazid, but this one who became one of the Shuhada of Karbala, we see something which is very much part of what Karbala and Ashura is about, and something that, practically speaking, we who are remembering this and mourning for this, we can take from it, which is the movement and the transformation, the ability to change, the ability to go from one thing to another. Why is this relevant to our topic? Yesterday, we spoke about the importance of lifestyle. And we said that there are different lifestyles that somebody can have, even though they're part of the same community, the same culture, the same society. And that's one of the recent developments in modern times. You can have two different neighbors who have two different lifestyles. That gives us the freedom. It gives us a freedom. We can have our own type of lifestyle. But the question is, what lifestyle we should choose and how should we get there? And of course, we want to choose the lifestyle of those who have been given to us as our guides, which is the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. But it's not just as simple as saying that, okay, now here's the principles by which the Ahlul Bayt taught us to live our lives, go ahead and let's go and act on them. Because in order to be able to adopt principles, be able to like take on new ways of living perhaps, or maybe if we're already living these ways, then inshallah that's great. But in many cases, maybe where we are, it's not where we want to be. So either we want to get to that, or we want to at least improve if we already are adopting these principles. But in order to get there, we have to first be able to go from where we are. We need to be able to transform. We need to be able to change. So before talking about what sort of things we want to be adopting, what are those principles, first I want to talk about this process of change. We see in that example of the companion of Imam Hussein, he was able to change, but for the most part, the people were not able to change. There were those who, they say, they were crying because of what was happening to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam in the battlefield in Karbala. They were there and they were crying. They were making dua. They were saying, oh Allah, do something here. Do something to prevent these people from killing the family of the Prophet. They knew the Quran. They had memorized the Quran. But they couldn't change. They could not change. They could not walk over and join the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So when it comes to the idea of taking on a new lifestyle or changing some of our lifestyle habits, and inshallah we're going to get to some specific suggestions, the first step though is recognizing what is it that we're already doing? What are we committed to? And in some cases, identifying it and then moving away from it. Yesterday I gave an example of, just a simple example of how we are affected by the society that we're in. And I give the example of architecture. Now, whether you like it or not, you know, for the most part, you're not gonna live in the home that reflects those three qualities of Islamic architecture that I spoke about: privacy, modesty, and hospitality. But what do? We take whatever homes that are there and then we try to kind of adapt, right? We do things in a certain way. We have a certain sort of routine that we follow, you know, to make sure that at least we do our best to have those principles. But we are affected by the society that we're in. Now, similarly, on many different ways that we do things, lifestyle is about the way that we kind of flow, the way that we sort of live our lives. If we start to examine, in many cases, we might be stuck on certain habits and certain customs and certain rituals, where if we don't, first of all, address that we're stuck and we're chained down by these things, and we don't figure out how to unchain ourselves, then we're never going to be able to go to the next level, which says that, okay, this is the type of lifestyle I'd like to adopt. I want to share with you an incident. There was one time a brother who reached out to me, and it was leading up to the month of Ramadan, and he was really concerned. He was one of those people who starts his morning with a cup of coffee, and that's just the beginning. Then, you know, an hour later, he has a second cup of coffee, and then, you know, you have chain smokers, then you have chain coffee drinkers. He was the guy, right? Throughout the day, his day and night are days and nights of Tim Hortons or coffee or whatever it is. I don't know what kind of brand, but anyway, this was the type of guy he was. So on the phone, he's like, month of Ramadan is coming up. I can't understand why God would make us fast for the whole day. Here I am, I'm trying to be productive. I'm trying to get rizq for my family. I need my coffee to keep on going. If I don't have my coffee, then, you know, I'm going to have headaches and, you know, it's going to be terrible. I just don't understand. I don't get it. Why does God want us to go through this difficulty? And, you know, at that time I said whatever I might have said, but what I want to share with you is this, that let's look at this from the perspective of lifestyle. Here, this brother is actually, his problem is the way it sounds like is that he has a problem of aqidah. He has a problem in belief and practice. He's like, I'm doubting in one of the wajibat, whether it's even wajib. But is that really the issue here? What is the real issue? If you go back and you go and say, okay, what's really the problem here? Okay, what is he saying? He's saying that he's so much in need of coffee that the minute he has less coffee, then his entire mood changes. He starts to get tired. Well, where's the problem here? Is the problem in the fasting? Or is there a problem in his being so fatigued and so exhausted in such a state where he's almost getting a breakdown and he needs this coffee to keep himself going? Right? Where does the problem lie? This person's actually in the red zone here. If that's what he needs to keep himself going, there's a fundamental problem there. And it's not just him. Maybe there's some individuals where, you know, they can live in their night and days with caffeine and coffee and whatnot. But many people, you know, when they have that type of thing, when they need that, it's a sign that there's a deeper problem here. What else is the problem? The problem is that he's so stuck to something. It's become such an object of attachment that now he's willing to change his beliefs to conform to and to be able to keep what he holds dear to himself. And I'm giving this an example, brothers and sisters. You can substitute other things for coffee, right? But it's a simple one. I think we can all relate to it. You know how it is, right? It's part of the lifestyle. I don't know. For a number of years, I was living in Canada. And the most common restaurant that we saw at every corner is Tim Hortons. And it was part of the Canadian lifestyle. I mean, it gets cold there, so people don't have maybe that much to do, right? So it's kind of a thing where you just go and you go to Tim Hortons, right? But it became, I don't know how the culture is in this city, but it was something where, you know, it could become part of your lifestyle. Every day in the morning, you know, there'd be some people like, not just like this, not much like this, it's like this, right? And there's some serious caffeine going on there. And you got to wonder, you know, that it's like before that, their eyes are like drooping and this, and then after that, like wide-eyed. Well, what's the problem here? You know, why aren't you getting enough rest? Why are you so like dependent on this stuff that it's almost like a drug now? Now, what am I saying here? That there's deep issues that are sometimes caused by the lifestyles that we have. And here we are at these majalis. Our goal is to aspire towards a better and a higher relationship with Allah Ta'ala. But sometimes the things that hold us back are not that we don't understand that, not that we don't know what we have to do, but rather it's the customs and the habits and the cultural artifacts that we're holding on to so dear and we can't get rid of them. Where am I getting this from? I'm getting this from the words of Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says in a number of hadith, about where he talks about adat, where he talks about like things that people become accustomed to, habits. What does he talk? He says in one hadith, he says that a habit can be like a sultan. Like, imagine that you have this ruler that you are, he's commanding you. It's telling you do this and do that and you're obeying him. Right? You're imprisoned by this one master. What is that master? It's your habit. In another hadith, he says that in order to be able to have ta'a of Allah, to be able to obey Allah, you have to get rid of those adat, those habits that prevent you from being able to worship Allah. And numerous other traditions. The Quran tells us in different places, it warns us against taking things and customs and making them be part of our lifestyle. I'll give you an example which has to do with ideology. It's from the story of the change of the Qibla. In at least a couple of surahs of the Quran, Allah speaks about this event. It was a big deal. The Muslims were tested. They were told to pray to the same place as the Jews were, Baytul Maqdas. And after some time, then the Muslims were told that, okay, now you turn your faces to the Kaaba. Now there were individuals who, they didn't get the abstract concept. For them, it was a very just sort of, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to do things very, very like, you know, sort of without any basira, without any type of insight. If I'm praying in this direction, how can you ask me to pray in that direction? Right? It's either this or it's nothing. And they were giving the Prophet problems. They were troubling him. And Allah Ta'ala speaks about it in the Quran. What does he say? أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. مَا جَعَلْنَا الْقِبْلَةَ الَّتِي كُنْتَ عَلَيْهَا إِلَّا لِنَعْلَمَ مَنْ يَتَّبِعُ الرَّسُولِ مِمَّنْ يَنْقَلِبُ عَلَىٰ أَقِبَيْهِ. Here you have some people who, for them, it's not the physical direction that matters. What matters is اتِّبَاعُ الرَّسُولِ. That, am I following the Messenger of God or am I not following him? And there were others who were so stuck with their custom that for them, it's like they're going to turn back on their heels if you tell them face this way and not this way. This was a test. And Allah describes it. He says that, وَإِن كَانَتْ لَكَبِيرَةً إِلَّا عَلَى الَّذِينَ هَدَى اللَّهِ. It was a big deal except for those that Allah guided. Moving away from those customs that we've inherited, those thought patterns that we might be stuck with can be kabir. It can be a major issue, except for those that Allah has guided. I'll give you, this principle applies in many social issues. I'll give you an example. It comes up in various different subcultures. Maybe it applies to some of you, maybe it doesn't, but at least you can appreciate it. One of the times where in our lives where there's a lot of emotion, a lot of ritual, a lot of culture, is the time of weddings. And you see how that people get very, very, like there's a lot that goes on. And many times you see, even in the most committed families, you see on this day there's sort of like a license that's given that, you know what, we're going to step aside from these values that we hold dearly, supposedly, we're going to set aside these practices and we're going to compromise. And it becomes like something, it's a big deal if you were to do anything else. And sometimes children, you know, the children of parents who are about to get married, they come and they complain to the scholars. They say that we don't know what to do because our parents are the ones who are saying we have to do it this way. And like, it, basically, it, if we don't do this, then we're not going to get married. So what are we supposed to do? Similarly, and I'm mentioning this, sometimes people, they complain. They say that, you know, brother, in days of Muharram, we don't want to hear about things related to like weddings and these things. But brothers and sisters, some of these issues are deep issues. We need to be addressing them, right? We need to bring them up. Even when it comes to like the age that somebody gets married, sometimes the youth come up and they're like almost crying. They say that our parents have fixed this age for us, the age of 30. Yes, my dear, I think 30 years old is a good time for you to get married. And then they're like, where did they get this number from? Is it like Wahyun Munza? Like, what is it? Where is it? How is it that 30 becomes the age? Right? And then they come, they say like, we're facing all these tests and challenges because of this sort of magic number that's been floating around. Or these type of degrees have to be gotten before it happens. Or this type, it's like, where are these coming from? So, habits, customs, and culture. This is what, inshallah, I'd like to speak about how we can go about addressing this. If you can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Brother and sister, I want to quote some of the ahadith we have. One of them is, أَفْضَلُ الْعِبَادَةِ غَلَبَةُ الْعَادَ. The best form of ibadah is to overcome your ada. Meaning that you have a habit, you have a custom that you're stuck on. Figure out how to, if it's something that's taking you away from Allah, then figure out how to overcome it. غَيِّرُ الْعَادَاتِ تَسْحَلْ عَلَيْكُمُ الطَّاعَاتِ. Change your customs, change your habits that you're stuck on, and then suddenly the ta'at will become easier for you. You know, those actions which you are called towards. Now, what are some of the examples that we have? Some of the, you know, practical cases. Now, you know, sometimes in when we come to these majalis, we want to be told, okay, this is what we need to do, A, B, C, and that's great, alhamdulillah. But oftentimes, brothers and sisters, it's a matter of looking at our own lives and seeing what is it that's holding us back. And so I might be giving some examples about, I don't know, Tim Hortons or another example, but it's important for us to see, okay, how can I take this and apply it? So I'm going to give some other examples, but inshallah, we can sort of take the principle here. We have one tradition from the Ahlul Bayt, they say, "Adatul li'am wal aghmar, adhiyatul kiram wal ahrar." Meaning that there are people who are low and they are people who are ignorant. What do? They bother those people of nobility and those people who are free. One of the habits and customs that sometimes we see among the families of even practicing believers is a habit of disrespect, a habit of like the dropping of culture and etiquette in the type of communication and dealings we have with one another. Sometimes, you know, we have people who on the outside, they seem like very decent people, very, they talk really well, very like good akhlaq. But then they come and say that here's some of our issues that we have. One of them is that we almost have a type of hostility at home. Maybe it's between the children and their parents. Maybe it's between the parent and the child, or between the spouses. And it becomes almost like a competition. It's like one person says one thing, the other person retorts in this way, and it becomes a type of habit. There's a habit of the lack of respect and love that's shown in the type of conversation that happens. This type of thing can be devastating, and it can be turned into a type of lifestyle choice. That in our homes, the constant sort of, if we wanted to measure, like, you know, on a scale of 10 being to 1, 10 being like awesome, great akhlaq, 1 being like, you know, we're enemies, you know, the scale is somewhere maybe between 1 and 5. That's where we are average. Right? That is something which is a problem. Right? For believers, for mu'mineen, in their homes, it's very important that they have, rather they establish these habits of having love and mercy and affection, these type of things that we read about in the tradition of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Sometimes it can go even further. We have another tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says, "Lisanuka yastad'ika ma awadtahu." He says, your tongue calls you to do what you have made it used to saying. Meaning that the words that you say, they actually become a source of actually acting upon them. Initially, things were all good. You know how, for example, every parent loves their 6-month-old baby, right? All the way while they're cute, they're toddler, and then suddenly they hit this age where that cuteness turns into something else, and it becomes more of a challenge. And then sometimes you see the parents, that same type of gentleness and patience that they had when the child was young, it suddenly goes away. And it becomes something where, you know, the words then turn into actual hostility. You know, no longer do they show that love. Then what happened to like embracing their children? What happened to kissing their children? Sometimes the children are complaining. They're saying that, for example, my father used to show me his affection, but now the only thing he does is scold me. Right? This is a problem. The lisan turns into an action. The tongue pulls somebody towards actually acting in that way where they're almost hostile and abusive. And then this becomes an issue. Sometimes we have examples of teenagers who are struggling with some of their wajibat. And you go and you dig deep into the problem, you see that the source of it isn't their lack of understanding. It's not even lack of wanting to do the right thing. The source of it is actually, and sometimes they admit this, the source of it is actually parents who are always on their case and nagging them and not supporting them, not giving them the words of encouragement, not showing them that love that they need. And we have many other examples of different things that happen. It can be in the way that we talk. It can be in the way that we recreate. Sometimes people admit, they say that we slipped into some bad habits when it comes to our choice of what we do with our mobile phones. Before, we used to end the night in peace. We used to have muhasabah. We used to read the Quran. We used to, like, you know, have good conversations as a family. And now, what we do is we get our phones and we do Netflix. And Netflix has become our go-to for all type of stress relief and everything else. And that becomes a lifestyle choice then. And it's a habit which is very hard to pull away from. Because they have figured out how they can make it so that these things are addictive. We have people who become addicted to social media. And similarly, before their conversations, you know, their happiness was found among their family members in calling their relatives, and now it's found in with other people. Right? These are lifestyle choices. They are habits that sometimes can develop, and we need to deal with them. Now, brothers and sisters, what is it that we can do in order to detect this? Because it's not important. It's important for us not to just leave this at the level of like general advice. How can we detect? How can we know what we can improve? One of the things that Islam teaches us is that we have to be people who are constantly in a state of monitoring and evaluating ourselves. We have to be mindful of what we're doing, how we're treating others. We have to be aware of the effects of our actions. It's much easier to get rid of a habit before it becomes a habit than to let it become a habit. They say that there was a dean of the medical school of one of the top universities. He says that 90% of my patients who go through a severe heart problems, and they have to actually have open heart surgery for these problems, 90% of them, if you track them 3 years later, they haven't made any significant differences in their lifestyle. They're still doing the same thing. We have other statistics, which one of them that really caught my eye, they say that for those people who actually have cancer because of smoking, so they're smoking so much, they're addicted to smoking, they're smoking, they actually get cancer, they say that 3 months later, 71% of them, okay, they've stopped smoking. But if you track them 6 months later, 52% of them have left, meaning that 50% of them have gone back to doing the same thing that gave them cancer. Right? And many, and whether it be medical, other areas as well too, we as human beings, we're very habitual. We're very much stuck on certain rituals. So one of the things is to be monitoring, to be evaluating ourselves, always asking ourselves, why are we doing? What are we doing? Sometimes if we go and we dig into why we do things that we know that are destructive for us, why we do things that take us away from good health, good spiritual health, good physical health, then we start to realize what are the real problems that we have. For example, oftentimes people, when they're stressed, they take on habits which are unhealthy. So first we need to understand, well, why are we getting stressed? What is the cause of it? Can we deal with that issue? Can we have a more of a balance in our lives? Can we deal with problems in a more holistic way so we don't fall into that stress pattern? Sometimes it's just a matter of preparation. Sometimes it's a matter of like adjusting things so that we can have more comfort and peace in our lives. One of the other things that we can do to make sure that we're having the right type of habits and customs is to spend time with people who are more experienced and they have an idea of what it means to live in a noble and honorable way. You know, these days we have an individualistic culture where people are spending time alone. They don't mix with others often. The value of elderly people has sort of decreased in society. I think you'll agree with me. But personally speaking, I can say that some of the most valuable lessons I've learned about how to live life are from spending time with elderly people. My parents, my in-laws, you know, relatives, elderly, grandparents, other members in the community where you see how they do things. Sometimes you look and see, how is it that your grandparents speak with one another? And then you realize, oh, so there's another way of dealing with it. You see, how is it that they, when rather than getting upset, how they are able to like show even more love? And you're like, oh, wow, that's something which is quite interesting. I can learn from that. This is how they show hospitality. This is how they recreate. This is how they interact. And you start to pick up, okay, there's other ways of doing things. This is the value, one of those values that unfortunately is sort of being diminished over time. I want to share some of the stories we have from the advice of the Ahlul Bayt alayhissalam, and then inshallah we're going to move to the Messiah. There was one man who once comes to Imam As-Sadiq alayhissalam, and he says that, "Oh Imam, there are times when I don't do the adhan for my prayer. I do the iqama, but I don't do the adhan." Now you know that doing the adhan and iqama are mustahab. The adhan is mustahab, the iqama is mustahab even more. It's even more emphasized. So he says to them, he says that there are times where I don't do the adhan, I do the iqama. Is that okay? The Imam says that la ba'asa bihi, there's no problem in that. But I don't wish that this should become something that is a habit for you. Right? It's very interesting. The Imam isn't talking about wajibat or anything like that. He's talking about habits. He's talking about how you have to be careful. Don't let yourself start to slip. Many brothers and sisters, you know, some of them, you know, we hear when they say that, okay, we used to read the Quran every day. Now we've lost that habit. Sometimes these things come up, they just slowly, they creep on you, and then one day after another, and then you lose it. Or you gain something which is negative. We have another tradition where Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, one time they offered him some type of sweet food. So he takes a little bit of it. But then he asks them, he says, "Okay, you know what, take this away." So they say, "Why? Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, you seem to enjoy it, it's good." And he did enjoy it. It was good. But he says something. He says that it is halal, it's not haram, and it is something which is tayyib, it's a type of pure food. But for me as an individual, I am concerned that I might get habituated and used to eating it, and I'm scared about it. I don't want to develop a new type of habit. Now, this doesn't mean, brothers and sisters, that we shouldn't have desserts. We shouldn't, you know, eat tasty food. Sometimes people take the hadith, we have to take the principle. The principle is what? That Amir al-Mu'mineen, he's watchful over his soul. He's careful. He's concerned about what he's doing, what type of things he's going to adopt. The last example I'll give you, and this is something which is really inspiring. Inshallah, you can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There was a companion of Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. His name is Sama'a. Sama'a, one time he got in an argument with somebody who he had hired to do something for him. And the argument got a bit heated. Now, later on, he goes to visit Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. He's one of his Shias, one of his followers. Immediately, the Imam, without even asking him anything, without saying anything, he says that, "Why did you talk to so-and-so in the way that you did? Iyaka an takuna fahashan aw la'anan." I don't want you to become somebody who is a fahash or la'an. Now, brothers and sisters, you know, in Arabic, there are these words which indicate a lot of meaning. It's one time for somebody to, you know, let's say something inappropriate or to curse somebody out. Here the Imam is saying that I don't want you to become somebody who is a fahash, sighatul mubalagha, means somebody who is constantly, frequently doing this type of thing. I don't want it to become a habit for you. And then what he says, "Inna hadha laysa min fi'ali wala amru bihi shi'ati." This is not something that I do, and I do not tell my Shias, my followers, to do these types of things. You have to hold yourself to a higher standard. Be careful about, yes, he might have done something wrong to you, but you have to have a higher standard. And then he says that don't ever go back to doing this ever again. Istaghfir, seek forgiveness, and don't ever go back to doing it again. Brothers and sisters, one of the most powerful values that we can have, that we're going to adopt as part of our lifestyle, is the value of being a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, practically. Being a follower means that we hold ourselves accountable in our actions. We know that they're being reviewed by our Imam. And therefore, we strive to have the highest level of etiquette and akhlaq and actions. May Allah Ta'ala help us to understand those things that hold us back from being able to adopt an Islamic lifestyle. Now, tonight, inshallah, I'd like to take us to the events that took place on the second day of the month of Muharram in the year 61 of Hijrah. We're now ending the second day of Muharram here. And I want to ask you to take your hearts and souls to the blessed land of Karbala. Karbala is a very special place that throughout history it's been the special, a subject of special attention by, we're told, all of the prophets. In one hadith, we're told that all of them did ziyarah of Karbala at one point in their lives. One time, for example, Hadrat Isa alayhi salam, he takes his disciples and he takes them to Karbala, and there's a special place there which is going to be the future gravesite of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he pauses and he tells them the story of what was going to happen and how the people who are living at the time of the grandson of the last promised messenger, how they would kill him. And they all begin to weep in the land of Karbala. Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam, one time he goes to the land of Karbala and he takes some of the earth from the Karbala, he smells it, and he says, "Tuba lakam." He says that, "Blessed be to you, min turbatin alayha turaqu dima'ul ahibba." This is the earth on which the blood of the lovers will be spilt. It's the land of the lovers of Allah. He says, these are the ushaq, those who have ishq for Allah. So this land is something which even the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam knew about before they got there. It was one of those treasures of knowledge that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had inherited, that Karbala would be the land of the bala, of the great test. Let's now remember the events which happened leading up to Imam Hussein alayhi salam entering the land of Karbala. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Sallallahu alayka ya Ibn Rasulillah. Sallallahu alayka ayyuhal maqtul عطشانا بأرض كربلاء. Peace and blessings be upon you, O leader of the youth of paradise, O ship of salvation, O intercessor, O our Imam Hussein, and upon the noble companions who are buried with you in Karbala. Ya laytana kunna ma'akum fanafuza ma'akum fawzan azima. If only we could be with you and attain the great victory that you attained, Ya Shuhada Karbala. O blessed martyrs, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam received the news of the martyrdom of Muslim ibn Aqil, he wept, he cried, but he did not give up the mission. He had made the promise to the Kufans that he would go to them, he would respond to their invitation. The Imam is never going to abandon his followers. He and his caravan proceed to Kufa, but at one point they are met by an army. The army has been sent by Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. Who is the leader of that army? It is none other than Hur. When he sees him, he asks him, "Are you with us or are you against us?" Hur tells him, "We are against you.
We have been sent by Ubaydullah. Imam Hussein responds, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. Every moment of Imam Hussein's life is a moment with Allah. Every action, every event that transpires, it is by Allah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam asks him, will you not let us go to Kufa? He says, no. Shall we return back to Medina? He says, no. So they make a direction that is neither towards Kufa nor towards Medina, until they get to a point where Imam Hussein alayhi salam asks, what is the name of this place? They say that it is called Nainawa. But is there another name for this place? They tell him, yes, it's called Karbala. He says that, yes, هذا أرض كرب وبلاء. Yes, indeed, it is going to be a place of great difficulty and test. This is the place where the bala'un azim will take place, that greatest of trials and calamities that befell the Ahlul Bayt. هذا محط رجالنا ومسفك دمائنا وها هنا محل قبورنا. This is the place where we will fight. This is the place where our blood will be spilled. This is the place where our graves will be located. One of those prophets who had visited Karbala, who had been told about what would take place there, who had wept his tears, was Nabi Adam alayhi salam. When Jibreel alayhi salam told him what would take place in Karbala, he told him that on that day of Ashura, the grandson of the Prophet will be crying out, Wa atasha, wa qillata nasra. Oh, the thirst! Oh, I have so little helpers! Jibreel told him that his thirst will be so great that he will look at the sky and it will be as if there is smoke in the sky. I don't know how great this thirst was in Karbala, but I do know that when they would bring food and water for Imam Sajjad later on, Imam Sajjad would pause and he would begin to cry, and he would say that the grandson of the Messenger of Allah on that day was given no water. His tears would come out of his eyes until they would make his food and drink wet with his own tears. Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimin. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept this majlis from us, to accept our tears and our good intentions and all of our efforts, the efforts of those who participate and who organize these gatherings. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept our deeds, and we ask Him to make these tears be a source of cleansing our souls and allowing us to be recommitted to our identity and to our faith and our practice. We ask Allah Ta'ala to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time and to make us among those who are firm in following his mission. We ask Him to help all those who are oppressed and to grant them victory over the oppressors. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. I ask that everybody please join me by standing up in your place and participating in the Latmiyah. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. How do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, how do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. How do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, how do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, Zainab has fallen, Hussein's back broken. Oh dear uncle, you are our chosen. Has the flag fallen? And I yell, Baba, Abbas and Hussein. No need for water. I want my uncle. You left with two arms, returned with no arms. Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas. You left with my wish to bring us water, Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas. But now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. But now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. How do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, how do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, why is he upon my father's chest? I see my father with Pharaoh's mother. Where is his brother? And I yell, Baba, Abbas and Hussein, where have they gone? Oh, I want my uncle. They've chained me up to a camel's back, Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas. Why are their bodies laying on these sands, Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas? Oh, now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. Oh, now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. Inna lillahi raji'un. How do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, how do we bear to see him? Abbas, our fallen moon, do they not know that is the neck that our prophet kissed? Heaven's final bliss I see from above. So I yell, Baba, Abbas and Hussein, where have they gone? Oh, I want my young.
They've ripped my earrings right off my ears, Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas. They cut his fingers to steal a ring, Ya Abbas, Ya Abbas. Oh, now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. Oh, now you've left my heart broken, for you're gone, Abbas, Ya Abbas. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. How do we bear to see him, Abbas, our fallen moon? How do we bear to see him, Abbas, our fallen moon? Did they not know that this is the son of Ali and Zahra, the prince of heaven? Oh, the oppression, and Ayal Baba, Abbas and Hussein, where have they gone? Oh, I want my uncle. I wait for the day Al Quds is yours, Ya Mawla, Ya Mawla. I wait for the day justice is served, Ya Mawla, Ya Mawla. I ask for you to come in my life, Ya Mawla, Ya Mawla. Relieve us of these pains brought upon, Ya Mawla, Ya Mawla. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. How do we bear to see him, Abbas, our fallen moon? How do we bear to see him, Abbas, our fallen moon? Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا، ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار، ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم كن وليك الحجة ابن الحسن، صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليها وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا،
حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Thank you brothers and sisters for joining us once again. Inshallah, we hope to see you all again tomorrow, inshallah. Salla ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.